I'm here today with Erin Aubrey Kaplan, Los Angeles journalist and writer. Hi, Erin. How are you?
I'm good, Tiffany. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Your book, Black Talk, Blue Thoughts, and Walking the Color Line, was just published. What inspired you to write a full-length book, and what kind of revelations do you hope readers will find in it?
The book is actually a collection of my journalism over the last, it goes back to 96, so that's 15 years. And in fact, I was just out there being a reporter, writing stories, and then I looked back after many years and realized that I really had kind of a narrative that was common to all of my stories, and that was really about kind of the state of, well, several things, the state of black LA, the state of black people in the country, and then actually, on a much smaller scale, my own state of mind and how I fit into kind of, you know, the modern black reality. So the pieces all range from just straight ahead stories about development in LA and public education to who am I, what am I, and where is the state of racial relations today. So it really goes all over the map, but in fact, all these pieces connect to make, I think, kind of a related narrative.
What kind of racial struggles still exist in Los Angeles that people just really aren't aware of?
Oh, gee, you know, I started reporting in 1992, which, as you know, was the year of the civil unrest in L.A., and I have to say that was almost 20 years ago, and the state of things are pretty much what they were 20 years ago, and that's not very encouraging. And so all I can say is that the racial reality today is pretty much what it was. Actually, it was pretty much before 92, it was pretty bad before then. You can go all the way back to 1965 to the first riots. This is a hard story to tell. It's a story of stagnation and a lack of change, which frustrated me terribly as a reporter. I always thought I was on this wonderful mission to bring light to the world and to encourage change. And this has been happening since the end of the civil rights movement. What kind of movement is there? What can we expect? You know, it's a hard story to write because you're writing about a lack of action versus action. So that's kind of what the book is about. It doesn't sound like an exciting topic, but it's very rich in terms of themes and history and even, you know, personal stake.
Why do you continue to write about this subject? What keeps you really interested in it?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'm just crazy. I don't know. I guess as a writer, first of all, I just like to describe the world around me, whether it's changing, whether it's good, whether it's bad. I guess Black LA is very, very open-ended. It's not finished. Let's hope, you know, want to keep sort of writing it down. I think it's interesting because L.A. is really, in my mind, the last big American city where people really can make their visions come true. That sounds kind of hokey in Hollywood, but I think there's an expectation here that, you know, we should do well. And if we can't do well here in L.A., then it doesn't bode well for the rest of the country.
What do you see changing in the future regarding these racial issues, you know, specifically in Los Angeles?
I don't know what I expect to see. What I hope to see is what I've hoped for the last 20 years, and that is a real focus on addressing of inequality. This is old. This is not a new sentiment. It's not a new issue. I think now, though, in 2011, we're having a moment of focus on inequality, which I think is very good, and I think I have not seen this since 1992, frankly. I think 1992 is the last time we had a national conversation about inequality, and that was around, you know, racial inequality because of the unrest. But now it's more broader than that, but it's still at this moment about inequality, and I really hope we can take that apart and see how black inequality is so foundational in terms of the inequality in this country. Now everyone is suffering. And it's, you know, the covers are sort of off on the problem. And while there's a lot of pain to go around now, I'm always encouraged by the truth, you know, by clarity. So I'm actually feeling fairly hopeful right now.
Do you think that gender issues have become more prevalent in the years since 1992?
Well, you know, gender inequality is so linked to racial and economic inequality. They're kind of hard to separate because, you know, a lot of poor people are women. A lot of poor people are single parents who are women. Women have, you know, lagged behind men in terms of earnings and all that. And that is, you know, overall it's better for women. But, you know, the gaps are still the same as they've been in this country for a long time. There's a gender gap, there's a racial gap, and the gender-racial gap together is its own gap. I hope that we're able to look at all these gaps and just kind of put our foot down and say no more. I think together they have a power that maybe they don't have when we look at them separately. So again, that's why I'm hopeful about this Occupy moment. I hope we occupy our minds with these inequalities that, you know, we've let go on for far too long.
Do you think movements like Occupy LA and Occupy Wall Street will help?
I absolutely think so. I mean, look who's out there. You know, it's a very diverse group. And, you know, it's funny. We have used the word diversity. We toss it around all the time. It became a very popular term after 92, and I actually started to hate it because it didn't mean anything. People would say, they would describe a room full of, say, white males with one woman or one black person as, isn't this diverse? I never saw it that way. But truly, the Occupy movement is very diverse, and people really seem to have a single energy around inequality, whether that's racial inequality, gender inequality, you know, economic inequality, which covers both. I think people are really finally understanding that they're all connected, and they really, you know, we really can stand up together and be visible. And that sounds really idealistic, but it seems to be happening. And people are not fighting amongst each other. They're not saying, you know, my gap is bigger than your gap. I do hope that we do, at some point, do break it down and understand that some of these gaps have different causes, have different histories. They are related, but they do have different needs. But at this point, I am encouraged just by the fact people are standing up together. That's very, very encouraging.
If there's one thing that you hope people are left with after reading your book and hearing what you have to say, what would that be?
I hope that they would say, you know, I always thought of racial problems as kind of a collection of numbers and statistics and bad news. I hope that they see in this book a person, a struggling person, who lives these realities and does not have it all together herself, does not have any answers, sometimes confused. But there is a person and a life behind all of these, behind this wall that I call race. I almost don't even like the word race. It's such a wall. I mean, not that it's inaccurate, but it is unpersonal. Race denotes a situation, a history. It's an abstract, and it really doesn't suggest people. So I hope that just with my own life, my own experience, and my own frustrations, I hope that in reading this book and seeing how I connect to that big wall out there of race and issues, I hope that people come away with a better understanding of color in America.
Erin Aubrey Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us here today in Annenberg Radio News.
Thank you, Tiffany.
Have a great one.
Okay, you too, Tiffany.